Hello world, welcome back to the Pocket Gamer Podcast with me, your host Brian Baglow, and our editorial team for our regular week in views. Joining me this week, we have most of the team. We have Craig Chappell, our head of content, Paige Cook, our deputy editor, and Aaron Assel, our news editor. Hello folks, how are you all?
Hello, it's good to be back.
Good, thank you.
I've back from GDC and Pocket Gamer Connect San Francisco. I've been a lot of travelling lately. I was in Istanbul a couple of weeks back as well.
Yeah, that's quite jet set. It's you must be happy to be back at headquarters.
I am pretty happy to be back. But to be fair, I really enjoyed GDC, meeting a lot of people, like old friends, new contacts. While I was out there, I met NetEase, Sensor Tower, Hasbro, Godot, as we now know.
Oh yeah,
it's pronounced
as we now know.
Probably get a correction now after I've messed it up. I also talked with King, TikTok, Discord. So I really had a great time, and you know how it is. It's like all day conferencing and then lots of events in the evening. So not much sleep, and the jet lag is catching up with me.
Is kicking in big style. Paige, Aaron, how about yourselves?
Yeah, it's been a good week. It's felt like a really quick one because of the bank holiday. So I keep thinking it's Friday, but it's not. But yeah, we've had some really good interviews and features on the site this week. We've spoken with King and Superplay. We had an interesting feature about Supercell's Brawl Stars, but we'll get into all of that a little bit later. And outside of that, I've actually managed to play some video games in my spare time.
Spill the beans.
I know, usually I don't get time. It's sort of evenings. It's like, no, but I managed to finish Final Fantasy Rebirth. It only took me forever, but I got there in the end.
Fantastic. And a long weekend coming up. So any video game sessions planned?
Yeah, I just started Dragon's Dogma 2, so that's going to be my long weekend binge game.
Question about Dragon's Dogma 2. Apparently there's a mechanic that I have no idea. Does it turn you into like the dragon if something happens, and then you could just end up killing lots of people? Is that a thing?
Yeah, I'm not far enough into it, but I know there's like I think it's called like the Dragon's Plague or something, so your pawns can get it. And if you sort of, it can just be one of those things that goes unnoticed, and if you don't realise that they've got it, they can turn into a dragon and essentially obliterate entire villages, including people that give you important quests. So I shall be avoiding
that. Sounds amazing.
Any pawns that show signs of Dragon's Plague, I will be throwing them off the nearest cliff. Go away.
Perfect, perfect. And Aaron, last but not least, how about yourself?
Yeah, so it's been a pretty good week for news overall. One of the standouts, I seem to have, Power World's come up a few times again after it was a big thing in January. Had a couple of stories get into a bit more later, but even, you know, big companies like Tencent are looking to kind of jump on the bandwagon, so to speak, make a few of their own games in that kind of style. So that's been one of the kind of noteworthy things. Mm-hmm. But other than that, I've not got much gaming in this week, I'm sad to say, but I've been doing some guitar research, looking to get a new guitar synthesizer. So that's been my out-of-work activity, really, for the week.
So is that a synthesizer that sounds like a guitar, or a guitar that sounds like a synthesizer?
The latter. So no, that's perfectly okay. So it looks like a guitar, and you'd play it the way you would play a guitar, but you can set up different effects, like on a keyboard. You know, you could make a keyboard sound like a trumpet or something if you wanted to. Mm-hmm. So it's a guitar that can do that kind of thing, essentially. So should be quite fun for.
Nice.
Messing around with.
It bodes well for your next live stage performance at a PGC event, so we shall look
forward
to that. Maybe.
You've said it now, we'll set it up, we'll save time, get your 20-minute slot.
That's it. We've got a live stage.
Hey, you did Mario-ke in London. Yeah. I remember that.
Mario-ke. Yeah.
That was really good. Actually.
It's like all we need is somebody live wrapping stats. You know, maybe that maybe one of the outputs of the whole big sensor tower piece is that we can have an annual report on the mobile games industry, but delivered in a freeform wrap. Maybe not. Moving on. And just to round out the team, I join you from the lovely Scottish borders town of Galashiels. I've been down doing a bit of a workshop in around games and building a national game strategy. So you can't see me. This is the audio only podcast, but I'm rocking the three-piece suit again. And I'm way, way too overhyped on caffeine. So we're going to move swiftly on. Craig, news run through. We're going to come to you first, and we're heading pell-mell, despite having been in GDC and San Francisco, we're looking at the EU and MENA.
Yes, I will go into GDC later in this. But firstly, this week, more big news, once again related to Apple. I feel like this is every week now. But so the headline... And
Daniel's not here to appreciate
it. No, he's not. Yeah. We haven't got the Apple Defence Force here. So in lieu of that, I'll continue the attack. It's not really the attack. I'll just... The EU's doing it for everyone. So the headline was EU's DMA, Digital Markets Act, bites as it opens non-compliance investigations into Apple and Google. So... The European Commission has launched this investigation over anti-steering and other policies it believes break new rules imposed by the DMA. The Commission expressed concern that Apple and Google, so large platforms it calls gatekeepers, were still not fully compliant with the DMA, which has now come into force as of earlier this month. And the DMA said they impose various restrictions and limitations on developers. And to quote, these constrain, among other things, developers' ability to freely communicate and promote offers and directly conclude contracts, including by imposing various charges. So that's about anti-steering. You know, you can't, well, technically you can't like link to a web store or to pay off the website. Apple did release new rules that we kind of got into before that kind of lets you do that, but kind of also not. So with that in mind, the EC is also investigating Apple's recently proposed fee structure for the App Store, which included the core technology fee and restrictions for those alternative marketplaces. The Commission said the new fee structure, as well as other terms and conditions for alternative source and sideloading, may be defeating the purpose of its obligations under whatever article that is. Which is actually something we touched on before, like a few weeks ago, when we were like, it doesn't seem to match the spirit of the law. And we kind of questioned like, well, that, you know, does that really matter? Apparently it does. And
strangely enough.
Yeah. And so the investigation is going to take up to 12 months, which seems actually quite quick for a government investigation. And an infringement could result in fines of up to 10% of, I think it was global turnover, rising to 20% for repeated infringement, and for systematic infringement, other remedies such as breaking up a company's business could kind of be enforced. So I think what's interesting is that the EU is taking it very seriously, which is what we wondered, like how much teeth does this have at by this sign, and also, you know, other companies like Amazon and Meta are kind of caught up with the DMA. By this, I think they're not messing around.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. It's it does feel as though the gloves are coming off. And more of the legislation around the world that's focused on these huge tech giants of whatever stripe really aims to hit them where it hurts. You know, we saw with GDPR, you can be fined up to, I think, again, 10% of your global turnover. So, you know, do we feel this is where Apple, as you say, Craig, starts to take it seriously? Or do you think they're still going to try and drag this out and make them fight for every inch?
I think they'll make them fight for every inch. But it is interesting to note that when, as we discussed again, like the other week, when Apple came out and said about that they gave Epic their account back and then took it away. And then give it back. It's like living Groundhog Day. And I think that was a sign that they're probably having, well, I think they were having discussions with the European Union behind the scenes, and while they're fighting tooth and nail, I think that also shows they are very concerned about this, and they are going to have to make some concessions, and maybe fight a bit less than they have done elsewhere. But whatever happens with this, there'll be an appeal probably, and it will still take years. But it's really interesting to see. So I've got so as well as that, I've got some other news from the Middle East that I kind of wanted to go through. There seems to be a lot happening there, so I'll try and rattle through these. Tamatem Games, which is based in Jordan, and a really kind of notable publisher there, is relocating its headquarters to the United Arab Emirates. It's got investment from Abu Dhabi. The deal will see it create a centre of excellence in Abu Dhabi as it seeks to support the country's ambitions of becoming a regional games hub. The publisher plans to recruit more than 40 staff in Abu Dhabi, and it said it will work closely with local universities to develop internship and training programs. And Tamtam's not the first company. Like, there seems to be increasingly, I don't want to be too dramatic, like a few companies moving out there. I just spoke with Hype Masters today. They make a game called World War Armies. They moved out there 2 years ago. I think Ubisoft already had a presence there, but I think it's moved its office. We're just seeing a lot more happen there. And on this note, I should say that we'll hopefully have more information on the site of this soon. We're doing a Middle East special, a MENA special, in April. So we'll have interviews with companies, including with Tamatem. And we'll also investigate kind of investments and other interesting news coming out of the region. I think one of the things that would be interesting to discuss is Savvy Games Groups. Their investments has actually encouraged investment from other countries in the region as they kind of try and compete and maybe realize the potential of not just the games industry, but other tech and even dare I say, Web3. I thought that was really interesting. Just for a big company like Tamatem, I don't think they're leaving behind Jordan, but just to move their HQ is kind of fascinating.
Well, it really does kind of speak to the fact that this is one of the most rapidly evolving, regions in gaming right now. With growth projected across all sort of the key performance indicators and KPIs, and people are, moving to establish themselves, because if it does continue to grow as it seems to be, it could emerge as something of a powerhouse for a lot of new areas of gaming, and for all of the, shall we say, suspicion around Web3, nobody's quite sure where it's going to go. And so rather than put your fingers in your ears and ignore it, making a few smart investments and testing the water might actually be the way forward. So I suspect we will see an awful lot more news and updates coming from companies as they try to establish themselves and make sure that wherever the region goes, that they're there and they're present. And just while we're on the subject, anybody out there who's listening in, anyone out there who's listening in, if you have somebody you would like us to talk to as part of the whole series around the Middle East and North Africa region, or you would like to come on the podcast and talk to us about it directly, then do please let us know. You can reach us at podcast@pocketgamer.biz. Sorry, Craig, public service notice, as you were.
We're going to get those announcements out, right? Metabolic, we do. It's happening. There's a few other stories kind of along these lines. So Sansoft and NetEase have established a joint venture called Stellagate Games to publish games in MENA. So they're basically creating a new venture that will act as a go-to-market partner for launching games in the Middle East and North Africa. They'll support games, support companies with publishing, marketing, live ops and esports activities. The deal will also see NetEase bring some of its games to the region. It sounds like a good deal for Sansoft, which also has plans to become a global publisher, not just Middle East focused. So perhaps this kind of deal allows it to do that a bit more. NetEase getting involved is also kind of a sign of increasing Chinese influence in the market. I've previously been told that Chinese publishers This is only just because of competition, right? But Chinese publishers actually make it quite challenging for local companies to grow, as they're releasing games in MENA, but they have budgets that like blow local companies out of the water. I think a partnership like this is probably good for both companies, and I think the Middle East and North Africa region as a whole. But I we'll see. Again, someone correct me if whoever's listening that if I'm wrong. And then we've just got a couple other quick bits of news. So Nexon has expanded, unsurprisingly, into the United Arab Emirates with new blockchain game subsidiaries. So they're basically just trying to solidify their blockchain ambitions in the Middle East, and they formed two subsidiaries last year. So that was Nexon Universe Global and Nexspace, and that's kind of part of its broader strategy to advance projects like MapleStory N through these initiatives. And then lastly, I feel like every one of these stories this week is United Arab Emirates, but once again, a UAE-based esports network, True Gamers, is set to build a $280 million esports island in Abu Dhabi. That was reported by Esports Insider, and they aim to build training facilities, a tournament venue, hotels, and content creation spaces. It'll also serve as a hub for meetings, startup accelerators, and animation studios. Why not? And so, yeah, that's all the interesting stuff coming out in the Middle East. We'll have a lot more next month, but I think definitely increasing amount of news coming out of the region.
Having your very own island, esports island. I mean, it sounds like a video game in its own right. So who knows? Maybe a future PGC, we can go to esports island and we can all take part. Aaron, bring your guitar synthesizer. I think we've got you your first gig.
Sounds good.
Well, we have enough conferences out there. I'm sure one of them will be on there in Abu Dhabi on the esports island.
Fantastic. Thank you, Craig. Okay, moving swiftly on. Aaron, put the guitar synthesizer down. Sorry if I got you all excited. We're going to come to you next. There are a few deals that you've been following this week,
yeah,
correct?
Yeah, so Embracer is selling Borderlands developer Gearbox to Take-Two for $460 million.
Wow, yeah.
So the deal is expected to be completed by the end of June, so not that far away. So that'll bring all three of Gearbox's offices into Take-Two's possession. The founder and CEO, Randy Pitchford, is going to carry on leading Gearbox under Take-Two. They're getting quite a lot of IP stuff out of it, because Gearbox is also publisher for Homeworld, and is also involved in like Brothers in Arms, Duke Nukem, Risk of Rain. So there's quite a lot that Take-Two is going to be getting out of it, and apparently there are six games they're working on that Take-Two will also now own. So it seems like a pretty good deal on their side. And then obviously
I just think that it's just another sale of one of their top studios, Embracer. And I get that they're trying to bring their debt down, and this does help do that, but like where are they going to start making the money after they finish these sales? If you sell your premier studios, they already lost Saber Interactive, and with that they're going to lose 4A Games, for example. It doesn't seem like this is even the end of like their fire sale either. That's just, yeah, I don't want to go too much always talking about, I feel like again every week is something going on at Embracer, but and I know they've got a lot to sort out, so this kind of thing has to happen, but I'm running out of words. What a shame, I guess.
Yeah, because I know that
it's an interesting one.
And it's like I recently covered their quarter three financials, and I remember that mobile revenue was down. And I think all of it was actually PC, console, and mobile. So, like, they saw improved profits, I'm pretty sure, because they let go of, like, over 1,000 staff. But as you say, you know, once they've made all the cutbacks, where are they going to be able to start making new stuff from?
Yeah, I think it's just what's left at the end of it. It would be, because I don't think these are necessarily either, like, these aren't like, oh, we're going to sell these and this, and that's the strategy, we'll focus on this. I think it appears to be, what can we sell? And then we'll deal with what we've got left. That's not a strategy.
Yeah, it's not quite a fire sale, but it certainly seems like there's a whole sort of grab bag of IP there that could be of interest. So
I disagree. You know, it's a total fire sale.
I don't know. It depends on were they allowed to choose the IP they wanted. You know, did they go after the IP and say, no, you have to take the whole lot?
True.
Which will be an interesting one to unpick. I'm just excited that we might actually get a Homeworld, you know, sequel meets Red Dead Redemption, Grand Theft Auto. You know, it's given me Firefly vibes.
All right, well, yeah.
You heard it here first.
Well, I'm trying to imagine it.
Yeah, so the next deal-related piece of news is Alluvium has raised $12 million in a Series A funding round to fund multiple blockchain games it's got in development. So King River Capital, Arrington Capital, Animoca Capital, and Spartan led the round. And yeah, the goal of it is for Alluvium to make an interoperable blockchain game universe where they're having multiple titles across platforms, and one of them's mobile, and they'll all basically use the same NFTs across them to try and encourage people to, you know, buy in one. So like the mobile one's more of a city builder. So I think you'll buy land that will let you acquire oil that is then a resource you can either use or sell to other players in one of their other games that's going to come out. And it all sounds a bit complicated, but that's the nature of NFTs, I suppose. But no, it sounds...
One of the games, like a Palworld game?
Yeah, so they're doing like an open world, Palworld. I don't know if it's inspired necessarily, because it's supposedly coming out soon, so they must have had it in development for a while. But they've said it's similar to Palworld, creature catcher, but in theirs, you know, those creatures will be NFTs as well, I think. But yeah, they've raised quite a lot of money towards it. Interesting to see what happens. They've raised $60 million in total so far.
These Web3 companies aren't short of funding.
Yeah,
that's for sure.
Well, it depends which currency you're raising it in. You know, if it's potato coin, you might not have such a good market cap. But if it's actual real world fiat currency controlled by the sinister governments of the world, then it might be quite good. I do find it quite interesting that a full 2 years after the kind of the blockchain kind of hype bubble burst in effect in games, that we're still seeing some reasonably significant investments. And it tends to be in companies that have more to offer than the smoke and mirrors of an ICO. So I remain deeply interested in blockchain and Web3. I think there's something there. I don't know what it is. I don't know how it's going to manifest. I think it's only once it's kind of baked into, you know, the game engines to allow you to actually, you know, control ownership in some way that we're going to start to see the use cases. But the fact that there are some investors out there still working in it, I do find telling. And I use that word very advisedly.
I think you're right that, I think it's less smoke and mirrors now, and a lot of the products we see, and even some of the investment, is tangible products that, you know, that are serious. Whether they end up being good is something we'll see this year, next year. I think even people in the Web3 space, they were saying at Pocket Gamer Connects last week that maybe it's even next year that we really start seeing it potentially breakout as a thing. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, watch. I'm interested to see watch this space for Web3.
Indeed. Indeed. Thank you, Arne. That was awesome, as always. Paige, let's come to you. What's been catching your eye this week?
Yeah, we've got some milestones this week. So one of them is Call of Duty Warzone generating 1.4 million in 4 days. But we're going to come back to this one because it's my one for the end, my little topic. So we will come back to that. So we've also got NetEase revealed that its multiplayer mobile game Eggy Party has over 100 million user-generated maps. They did also share that 60% of players are actively creating content, which, you know, over half of your players, that's pretty good going, I'd say. You know, and I just think this is another good example of sort of the rising popularity of user-generated content. And I think it's something that we're only gonna see more of, not just in this game, but just other games, new games doing it. And I think as long as the games being developed provide the right tools for it to happen, you know, like look at Roblox, like it's just completely self-sufficient because everyone playing it is making new content. So yeah, I think it's just a testament to the success of that strategy, really.
It's a great game, and I chatted with them last week, so. Again, interview coming soon. they basically built like this user-generated platform, user-generated content platform, and then they added in how do we make this a game? And so they added in like the party element that is like a Stumble Guys or Fall Guys, which I found fascinating and how it's grown, because before that I think it was kind of known as here's another Stumble Guys clone. Or Fall Guys clone, whereas actually it's a lot more than that, and you can kind of see, I think, in its success that it's found its own market, and companies like Tencent with Dreamstar are trying to copy it.
I do think that the user-generated content side of things is something that we need to pick up far, far more, because as you say, Eggy Party's there, Fortnite is stepping into this in a big way, Roblox has been doing this for years, it's their entire business model. And you could argue that some of the layoffs that we've seen at some of the companies that are doing this is because the core game's there now, and user-generated content, once you've got the tools, you put it into the hands of your players, it then becomes about community management, moderation, publishing, etc., etc., etc. So it's a completely different way of looking at things. And I know some developers have not taken it kindly that so much of the content coming out of a game is from the players themselves rather than relying on professional game designers and developers. But I do think there's a huge, huge market for this, and it's only going to get bigger. You know, if you look at what's happened, the biggest app in the world right now is TikTok. Simple video sharing, when you put the tools into the hands of people, you know, they don't become citizen journalists, they become influencers or try to sell you water picks or whatever the hell else it is that they're doing on TikTok this week. But I do think that the games market is going to be massively impacted over the rest of this year by the growth in UGC. So it's really interesting to see a company that's proudly talking about it as a key part of their offering, and 100 million user generated maps is no small matter.
I think a lot of its success has been in obviously China, but now it's out globally. Interested to see how it competes with the likes of Fortnite, Roblox, or even as you say, TikTok, right? Competing for time as well.
And we also have a hyper casual developer and publisher FreePlay. They've surpassed over, I think it's 1.5 billion downloads across its game portfolio in 4 years. But interestingly, the company did state that up to one third of those installs were during the past year alone. So, you know, it's quite interesting that a big portion of that is just essentially in a year. But they have sort of shifted some of their focus from hyper casual to hybrid casual and casual titles, and they're supposed to have some upcoming games that are due to be launched. But this kind of keeps up with the conversation we had on the podcast last week. We sort of discussed how well hybrid casual was doing, and that, I guess, so sort of leaves a little bit behind for hyper casual. I don't think it's dead, but you know, hybrid casual is just sort of surpassing it. So yeah, I don't think it's surprising to sort of see free play also looking towards that realm as well.
Yeah, it's we're seeing this on the sort of the, I was going to say the main podcast, that sounds terribly demeaning, the podcast I do with Peggy. We've been talking to quite a lot of people who are really drilling down into the user acquisition campaigns and how the UA teams within a lot of studios are doing some incredible work, you know, using automation, AI in some cases, really to turn around games that have had their peak and extend that life, that lifeline. And I'm with you, Paige. I don't think we've seen the last of hyper casual by any stretch of the imagination. It might be more difficult at the top end of the market, but certainly as a way of keeping those users coming. And if you can get that UA spot on, there's still a lot of money out there and a lot of players that you can engage with from the very simplest games.
I would say on that, when I did the panel last week at PGC about hyper casual and hybrid casual, I'd say the panelists wanted a lot more time on hybrids because it was like, well, I guess one, hyper casual, the default has been discussed to death, but also, I mean, they're kind of in agreement that it's basically a life support. So anyone in the space, any big company at least in the space, is looking at hybrid casual to kind of grow. Yeah, there's probably opportunities for other developers, maybe new developers, but yeah, otherwise everyone's kind of moving on.
It's going to be an interesting one to watch. Thank you, Paige. That was fantastic. Craig, we're going to circle back to you.
So I've got layoffs news and Tencent news. So we'll cut into the one that broke today. So Sega laid off 240 employees and it sold Relic Entertainment. The layoffs were at Sega Hardlight, Sega Europe, and Creative Assembly. It's a real shame to see Creative Assembly yet again struck by layoffs. And obviously I feel for the rest of the teams. I'm kind of surprised they sold Relic. So years ago, their strategy in the West seemed really clear to me. Strategy, and I think this, they might have even said this in a column back on Develop Magazine way back when. And it was like, at the time when they bought Relic, someone was like, this is great. This is Sega showing confidence again in M&A and in the market. Clear strategy was strategy games for PC. Done. And they excelled at it. Total War, what a success. Football Manager, amazing. And then you buy a company of heroes, you're doing great. And then suddenly, last couple of years, I don't really know what's happened. I feel like I can't really even blame like the pandemic come down. It really confuses me what's happened there. I mean, obviously, Creative Assembly did Hyenas, and then as soon as it hit what, beta or whatever, it was cancelled straight away. I bet the team there made a fantastic game, but I don't know. Maybe it's difficult. Like, maybe they should focus on strategy. Maybe that's part of the issue that's kind of come down on them. But also, hey, they made like my favorite game ever, which is Alien Isolation. So it's not like they don't know what they're doing. I'm very confused by the situation there. I think their strategy is not as clear as it used to be, like overall for Sega.
It's in keeping with so many of the headlines we've had over the first quarter of this year in terms of layoffs, in terms of consolidation, in terms of downsizing. And again, it's hard to look behind the headlines. Our hearts go out to all of the teams, all of the people affected across all of the companies who have been laid off or lost their jobs. But I'm also with you, Craig. You know, with a lot of those titles, they were absolute, you know, world-class, market-leading. You know, Age of Empires was my own particular weakness. I think I might have lost about a year to that game. And so, you know, there's so many fans, so many people out there who are buying it. What are the economic realities behind that headline? What drove that decision? It's a hard one to parse, really.
Yeah, you just hope it's not management there at Sega just trying to grow for all costs. I don't know. But then what's the consequence of that? If that was what the thinking was, we'll lay off people now, but then in a few years, well, you wish you had them. So, Yeah, what a shame. Like these are fantastic studios, and it's just such a shame.
But hopefully it will be better for Relic, at least, but they're basically just going indie. You know, they've not been sold to someone else. They're just going to be an independent studio. Maybe that's better from their perspective than Sega laying off their employees.
Yeah, I don't know, like, the whole deal, so I don't know if there were layoffs as part of that. Best of luck to them, because, like I say, really good studio, really good at what they do. So other quick news. So Tencent, and they were both kind of similar news. They follow up from each other. So one of the stories was that they were focusing on fewer bigger budget games as it shifted away from their IP strategy. So I think the story was essentially that their big licensing deals, which, if I remember right, it was like the royalties, like 15% to 20%. And then that's not including, you know, all the other costs, like platform costs and whatever, when they release a game. They're kind of moving away from that strategy, except maybe with like the biggest IP. And they want to focus on developing their own internal games, which I found fascinating. And then kind of following on from that was the news that their top two studios are separately, because they're quite independent. So Timmy and Lightspeed Studios are working on, once again, Power World-like mobile games. Because everyone's got to do it, and they're doing that for mobile. See, Power World had 20 million sales. Again, that's kind of focusing. That'll be an internal IP, so I guess they're not just going to buy Power World or license it. Like in the past, they licensed, say, PUBG to make a shooter or Call of Duty. Now they're just doing it themselves. They couldn't license, obviously, Eggy Party for obvious reasons, but they're making their own internal IP with Dreamstar. So, yeah, it kind of goes back to also the CEO was saying their games division wasn't really doing enough, which is pretty harsh considering how successful they are. But I guess they're looking for the next breakout hit, like Honor of Kings and another PUBG Mobile, which maybe they're struggling to get. So yeah, change the strategy there. We'll wait and see what happens.
As you say, we'll wait and see what happens. I'm sure it's going to be interesting, but you can read all about it, obviously, first and foremost, on pocketgamer.biz. Now, Arne, we're going to circle back to you, and you've been looking at data, I believe.
Yes. So there was a report that came out from Anzu and Happydemics, the full funnel impact of intrinsic in-game ads report, which was comparing different ad types in games and compared to, I think, like the online media average. And they found that intrinsic ads in games make players 5% more likely to consider making an in-app purchase. And in basically every metric, they found intrinsic in-game ads are the way to go at the moment. So they, 5% above the average on purchase consideration, 13% above on ad recall, so being able to remember the ads when asked about them later, 11% above average on brand recognition or identification after the fact, basically in every way, intrinsic ads are on top at the moment, which the report suggests is because they can appear in a non-interruptive form, you know, on screen. Engagement isn't reduced, and I guess people end up looking at them for longer, or subconsciously maybe. Whereas other forms, you know, if you're playing the game and then a video ad pops up, and now you can't play the game anymore until the ad ends, you might just might be miffed enough to stop playing the game, depending on how much that happens. Or, you know, you might just look away, do something else while the ad's going, versus it being there the whole time and not interfering with what you're doing. It was an interesting report. I'd say, intrinsic ads basically won on all metrics they looked at.
Now, that's an interesting one, because we've had a lot of discussions. We've had several guests on the podcast in the past looking at ads, and essentially stating that how you use ads, where you use ads, are now game design decisions. So it's not the marketing team just basically going cut, paste, they're not going there. But it really puts control back into the hands of developers. So it makes perfect sense that if developers are using this and treating it and their players with respect, then yes, absolutely. You know, it should be something that fits within the flow of the game, because you control when and how it's seen. So we're going to keep moving on. Time is ticking down. Paige, we're coming to you for a quick roundup of our features. What have we been covering this week on the site?
Yeah, so I mentioned these briefly at the beginning, but we had a game analysis piece written by Oksana Farmina. She did a brilliant in-depth look at how Supercell were able to sort of dramatically increase their revenue and retention numbers of Brawl Stars. I know at GDC they did a talk on this, and they sort of mentioned how, you know, at some points the game had dipped in both of those sort of departments. And yeah, this piece sort of dives into what they did and what content they introduced to give the game a performance boost, which initially it led to a revenue increase of 8.8 times, and their daily active users went up 3.9 times. So yeah, it's a really in-depth piece, very interesting. And I always think it's nice to see developers being transparent about their games. And I think it's important that people do talk about the tough times that their games go through, because that can be so much more valuable than just, oh, our game was brilliant, was always brilliant. Like, you know, there's ups and downs. So yeah, this is a very interesting feature on how they sort of pulled it back and, you know, ended up boosting their game really well.
They had a great talk at GDC about this. And it's like, they decided to get rid of, I think the game was on a bit of a downturn, and they decided to get rid of loot boxes and figured this would be a great idea. We'll do a big announcement. We're getting rid of loot boxes. And then, I don't know, I can't remember how long it was now, but they have spent like years, or I really can't remember when that decision was made. They spent the longest time reviving that game's fortunes. And then every new thing that they did made, like, you see a small bump, and then it made things worse. And then they finally hit kind of the jackpot with new features. I think it was Star Drops, I think they're called, and some other new features that have actually really led to this huge surge in growth that we've seen.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. Like I said, I think it's good that they sort of did give that talk, because I think it's really valuable for other developers to learn from you. I think just in general, whether it's games or in life, I think you learn a lot more through, you know, a few hardships than you do from all the successes you have. So yeah, it's a very good piece to sort of see, you know, how you can kind of turn a low into a high. But we also had an interview with Superplay. We spoke a lot about Dice Dreams and how they've sort of turned it into a 30 million like sleeper hit. We did discuss sort of their other game, but it was predominantly Dice Dreams and the development process behind that and some of the design choices that they made. There's also some little tips in there for retention, and we also discussed their marketing. I know Daniel mentioned this in last week's podcast. He mentioned about them having Kate Beckinsale in their adverts, so I kind of had to ask them about that and just, you know, how they go about, you know, getting these celebrities and how successful it actually is in their marketing. So yeah, that was very interesting, and how they actually make that happen. And then we had another interview that went up today, because King, their Candy Crush Saga All-Stars tournament kicks off today. This is the fourth edition of the tournament, and there is a massive $1 million prize pool, which kind of just blows my mind, to be honest. Definitely need to play some Candy Crush again. But yeah, it looks like it could be the largest casual mobile gaming tournament to date. So yeah, we spoke with Candy Crush's VP of marketing about, you know, what actually goes into making these big events happen, and, you know, what it sort of means for the legacy of Candy Crush. You know, it's over a decade old, and it's still going, and, you know, after a decade it's now doing you know, possibly the biggest tournament we've kind of seen. So I think that's just, you know, an amazing testament to sort of the game's legacy. And it was interesting that in the interview when we sort of asked, you know, what sort of the catalyst for these events, you know, obviously they churn out a lot of new content to keep people engaged, but, you know, why such a massive tournament? And it's all a direct sort of cause of player feedback who, you know, they'd stated they wanted something, you know, a bit more competitive to be a part of. And, you know, this is the result. So I guess the big message there is listen to what your players want and it will probably pay off.
Listen to your players. It's like, well, you know, if there's ever anything that comes right back down to the fundamental root of good game development, listen to your players, except, you know, obviously when they're wrong. Craig, we're going to come back to you for our weekend views and we're going to have a whistle-stop run through the key takeaways from GDC, I believe.
Yeah, so had a few, naturally, as did everybody that went to GDC, had a few takeaways. I've written an article about the same thing on BizZ. You can check it out there as well. But yeah, a few things I wanted to go through. So one of the takeaways was that kind of, it felt to me, except for Epic, their State of Unreal, the big news was outside of GDC. Usually in the past, I'm kind of used to, at least from my Develop magazine days in particular, like weeks before, you're getting embargoed press releases, loads of them. And then during the week, you get loads of press releases. You could do a roundup of like 10 stories a day just about, you know, tools updates and that. And I felt this year, unless I missed it all, which clearly bad at my job, but I just didn't see like loads of that. There was obviously some of that, but not loads. And so yeah, the Epic Game Store launching later this year, iOS and Android, we discussed last week. Yeah, a big story, kind of already announced in tweets leading up to the event anyway. But the big news that we covered last week, Sensor Tower acquiring Data AI. Can I swear? Holy shit, that's a big one.
You can. It's the internet. I think we're allowed.
And then the Department of Justice case against Apple. So like, but the big stories, worry about these outside of the show, at the show. It was still great. Really great to meet lots of people, but it just felt quieter this year in terms of announcements. Second takeaway was mentioning Godot again. So I think Godot and Unreal take advantage of Unity still reeling, is how I put it. So Unity is suffering from the runtime fee fiasco and the number of layoffs that they've had to do. And you could kind of see that on the show floor, that Unity's presence to me seemed very much more low-key than it ever has. Like, to be honest, I had a hard time, it wasn't that small, but I had a hard time kind of noticing it. It's pretty widely glossed. But compared to like Epic has this massive booth, and I think it had like two floors, and you knew Unreal was there. And at the back of the expo, Godot, I think it might be their first like expo area, that was like notable. Not as big as Epic, but it was pretty big, and it felt more substantial than Unity. So I think maybe that was deliberate strategy because of the layoffs, that they kind of being a bit more low key. But you know, I'm interested to see how that plays out throughout the year, because Godot is really going to be gunning for Unity in particular. See if they're going to take some of that market share, then ultimately how that affects Unity. I think Unity will be back stronger next year, but yeah, we'll see. Third takeaway. Try to rattle through. But so I put Web3 and AI are simmering, but still waiting for their big breakout. So you could see like big Web3 stands, from Avalanche and Arbitrum, I can't remember their name, something like that. And then for AI, you also had like the in-world stand. And AI was kind of spoken about a lot during the event. We had a lot of that at Pocket Gamer Connects. King was there, you know, talking about their AI stuff. Again, we have another interview coming up. It was a busy week. And then Web3, oh, sorry, I said the two stands, but it felt like there again, it's simmering away. No big announcement, but maybe 2025, 2026. Maybe if they actually, I guess, match their potential, that's when we'll really see them, like the real big trend of GDC. Elsewhere was, I put UGC is no longer flying under the radar, but it's not flying high either. That's not to say that Fortnite and Roblox are massive successes. They are. But I think, whereas in the past, I think everyone kind of knows about Fortnite and Roblox, but don't really, well, UGC, but they don't really talk about it massively. I think this year there was a lot more content focused on that, but it's still kind of, to me, it's still kind of being ignored and not spoken about enough, considering the potential by a lot of developers. That could be down to maybe teams, studios just aren't built to make games for Fortnite and Roblox versus other hardware platforms. Maybe they're not very happy with the revenue shares on these platforms because they're pretty tough, especially on Roblox. You don't really make much money for the investments that you put in compared to what you might make elsewhere. Obviously, you get the development tools. Again, maybe that with the developments to Unreal Engine for Fortnite, maybe next year that's something we'll kind of see blow up a bit more. And then lastly, just put the industry is kind of reckoning with its challenges. So, you know, had a mix of conversations, and there's a lot of concern about a decline in market, especially in opportunities in mobile, and you know, obviously layoffs. So people are kind of worried. And I spoke with a few emerging market kind of developers and trade bodies. They were very concerned about like the coming kind of year, but for the long term, they were quite hopeful. You also had the GD scream. So there was a bunch of people in the park next to the Moscone doing a big scream to say like, how unhappy, to show how unhappy they are with how the industry has been. And then, but, you know, but for a positive, I think at the show, there's a lot of promise like for the industry, right? So you've got Monopoly Go, Eggy Party. They've been huge successes. We've got Unreal Engine for Fortnite, which could, you know, be a huge new platform. And I played a really cool game called Wuthering Waves from a team called Kuro Game. They've actually hired hundreds of developers to go all in on this new game. And they've done massive redesigns. Again, that'll be an article. Genshin Impact style game, but that was really cool. So ultimately, my takeaway was it's been a tough time for the entire industry, but it's great to see developers try to look past it and innovate as they are better years ahead. So that's my takeaways.
Fantastic, Craig. That was brilliant and very succinct. Thank you very much indeed. Okay, we're going to head rapidly for the end and wrap up, not least because I'm about to be kicked out of the lovely podcast studio that I'm in. So let's wrap this up. Paige, let's come to you next. What are your final thoughts for this this episode?
Yeah, so your favourite game, Call of Duty. So as we mentioned earlier, so Call of Duty Warzone has generated 1.4 million in just its first 4 days, which, you know, obviously that is not a low number. That's very impressive. But I just think it's interesting that Call of Duty Mobile did over 4 million in its first 4 days. So it's kind of lagging behind its predecessor. But, you know, it's early days. We'll see how things play out. But I know they've had some sort of optimization issues, and that's resulted in a bit of a classic gamer tactic of now we're going to review bomb it. And I mentioned last week how, you know, I've played it because I'm always interested when new things come out and how they actually run and play. And it does have some issues, you know, the graphics are a little bit odd with the way it sort of streams its assets, and it does get better over time, but then there's still the bugs and some of the textures still are a bit off. And you know, when you think that this game, I think it's like 6.5 gigabyte install, like it's big for a phone game, it kind of at the moment I'm like, is it worth that much space? And it absolutely annihilates your phone battery. I think, you know, a couple of matches and your phone battery's gone. So if you don't have a high-end phone, basically, I don't even think it's possible to play it. I have, you know, the highest-end Samsung, and it still sort of wipes it out. But yeah, I think it's interesting, and I'm intrigued to see what sort of happens with it. And I do think that if they can iron out these problems quite quickly, then, you know, we'll see if it can get up to the numbers that Call of Duty Mobile did. But even though there are some positives, you know, the controls are really great and it has cross progression and stuff, so it does have some things going for it. But I just think if they've released it in this kind of state where it's not playing brilliantly, that's maybe why it's lagging behind what Call of Duty Mobile did, and people are kind of just like, meh, you know, this isn't what we were expecting. So we'll see. But I'm definitely intrigued to keep my eye on it and see what numbers it ends up doing, because at the end of the day, it is Call of Duty and people just don't get bored of Call of Duty, apparently.
It's inexplicable, but who knows where we're going to be. Please do report back from the front lines page. And last and very much not least, Arne, you're going to have to make it quick. Arne, there's a big man looking at me in a scary way.
That's so all right. Him we're talking about Roblox, that will cheer him up. So mine's Roblox has launched a $35 million creator fund towards next-gen experiences. And the most interesting part of that to me is that they're promoting making short-form video content, which would be quite an expansion for Roblox beyond gaming and stuff. And I just think it's an interesting time for them to be pushing in that direction with all the uncertainty around like TikTok in the US at the moment. And I'd just like everyone to picture a world where TikTok is no more, does not exist outside of China, and everyone's just making videos on Roblox. What a world that will be.
Aaron's crusade against TikTok continues.
I think we can all get on board with that. We all live in Roblox. We're all making content in Roblox. TikTok is no more. Where on earth will I find out all of the latest conspiracy theories? Hopefully, Roblox can step up and fill in that gap. Yes. Okay, thank you, Arne. It has been a delight and a joy, as always, for taking us there at the very end. As always, folks, we appreciate your time, your attention. We know there are a lot of other podcasts out there, so we're very grateful. If you could leave a like, a review, and a share, you know, maybe say a few kind words wherever you get your podcasts, it's always welcome. If you want to get in touch, you want to let us know what you would like us to talk about, if you would like to appear in the podcast, do please get in touch. You can reach us at podcast@pocketgamer.biz. And until next week, it's goodbye from me.
Bye.
Are you going to say goodbye, folks?
Goodbye. Good luck, Brian.
Bye.
A pleasure as always. All right. Everyone, take care out there. We'll see you again next week. Goodbye.